Thanks, Carla. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Diarmuid. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. While I was away for the week, I read a fascinating book, Pathogenesis by Jonathan Kennedy. Humans did not make history, we played host. And it's just, it's riveting. And it'll change the way you think about the world and us, as in humans, and how history was shaped. We think that we had the say in it, that great men shaped history, when in fact it was plagues and diseases, all the stars, malaria, smallpox, cholera, yellow fever, they're the ones that shaped the world we live in, and not great men. So says Jonathan Kennedy. It's one of the best books I've read in an awful long time, and Jonathan's going to be talking to us in about 10 or 15 minutes. Now, it's confusing this time of the year. Every year it's the same. We get a bit of sunshine, we get temperatures above 15 degrees, and we go, yes, it's vest and shorts time, Birkenstocks, open-toe sandals, get rid of the coats. And then a week later, it's back down to 3 or 4 degrees and we're going, where's that coat? Where is that coat? It's confusing, isn't it? And over the weekend, I saw it. I saw a man walk down the street in a pair of shorts and a vest, and then there was another man in a winter coat. Can I not just get it right? You know, just, I think a lot of people say that, don't they, about Ireland, that we don't have really well-defined seasons. You'd like to be able to say, right, that's it, that's winter gone and spring gone. Now I can put all that away, wherever you put it away, and get out the shorts and the Birkenstocks or the sandals and all that sort of thing. But it doesn't happen that way. So just be careful. Just be careful. Carla Weather tweeted today, if you feel inspired to get the garden furniture out and put away the winter coat, you might want to hold off. The weather models are showing a late blast of cold northerly air heading our way from Sunday for a few days. So that's that. Don't put the coat away. We're heading to the seaside on Friday, so hopefully it'll be nice for that. Because I'll be getting down to my togs, yeah, showing off that bod, getting into the sea. I'm looking forward to that. They haven't told me where we're going yet. We just say we're going to the seaside. That's what they said yesterday when I arrived back in. It'll be an outside broadcast of some description. Colette has been on, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon, Colette. Thanks so much for telling us about the Merlin Bird ID app. I'm addicted now. The best time to use it seems to be early morning. It's a great education because I never heard of a Dunnock or a Eurasian blackcap before. I know all about them now. I think I'm becoming a bird nerd. Ha ha. It's a twitcher. Isn't that what they call them? They call them twitchers. Have a great day bird watching and more importantly, bird listening. All the best, Colette. Yeah, we had Niall Hatch in before I left and for the week break. And he was telling us about this app and I downloaded it onto my phone and I used it a couple of times during the week. Merlin Bird ID app. And as I said yesterday, and he said when he was on, put together by academics. So it's good scientific backing to it. And I think through the app, they are gathering information from all over the world. So you have to go in when you download the app and say where you are in the world. And it keeps a record then of all your not sightings, but listenings. And it gives you a recording and all that sort of. So it's a great app. It's free of charge. FOC, free of charge, which is great news. Great news as well for fans of Hamilton. It's coming to town. The world's most famous musical. And it was the hot ticket. It has been the hot ticket for a number of years now. Lin-Manuel Miranda is the man behind it. It's coming to Dublin's Bord Gáis Energy Theatre for a 9-week run. From the 17th of September is Hamilton. New York, just you wait. Alexander Hamilton. We are waiting in the wings for you. Waiting in the wings. You never back down. You never learn to take your time. Oh, Alexander Hamilton. He's a talented man, is Lin-Manuel Miranda. He writes, he acts, he sings, he dances. He's the quadruple threat. That man, or a quintuplet threat. He says Hamilton was originally a hip-hop concept album in his head. It's been running on Broadway in New York since 2015, it's in its 8th year, and has won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, 11 Tony Awards, 7 Olivier Awards, and the Grammy for Best Musical Theatre Album. So all of those people can't be wrong. Tickets go on sale Friday week, 28th of April. So that's exciting. We're talking musicals today as well. Mattress Mick the Musical. Yes, forget your Hamiltons. Mattress Mick the Musical. And we have the man himself and the star of the show who's coming in. And we'll be talking musicals and mattresses and Micks, if you know what I mean. Yeah. AI, we're fascinated by here. Well, I'll use the first point. I am fascinated by AI. Now they're generating music. So Drake, one of the most listened to artists in the world, The Weeknd, probably the most streamed artist on Spotify. He has over 100 million monthly listeners. And AI have got the two of them putting together and come up with a song. What's with that? Now, it's going to get better and better, you see. That sounds a bit rough around the edges. But it means that we'd be able to go into some sort of AI system and say, David Bowie and The Stunning, give us an old song. If they were doing a song together, give us an old song that they'd do. And it's going to throw it up and it'll be high quality. It's going to be very confusing. And there's a brilliant picture on the cover of The Guardian today, still on AI, of two women. They look like sort of 1940s, 50s, black and white film stars, you know, in the Audrey Hepburn style, Ava Gardner. Anyway, it won an award in a Sony photography competition in Germany. It's the work of a German photographer stroke artist called Boris Eldegsen. And he admits now that he's a cheeky monkey, that he did this using AI. Now, he doesn't specify how he did it using AI, but it is the work of AI. And as a result, he's given back his award. He won. And he wants to start a discussion, a debate about, you know, what's accepted in these photographic competitions and the role of AI and what is true and what's not true and what's real photography and what's not real photography. But it's an amazing photograph, whoever did it, and it's there on the cover. It sort of, it looks like it's an old photograph. It looks like it's sort of sepia type thing. It looks like maybe there was something on the lens, or maybe it was one of the, I don't know what they call them. You know, the one they used to do, they used to have a thing. It looks like it was a bit damaged, but it's really, it looks like an old photograph. It won the award and now he's given it back and he wants a conversation about that. So we'll keep you posted on AI. If you have any updates on anything AI in your world, do fill us in. 51551ray@rte.ie. Joe was talking about who should present the Late Late Show. We asked AI. Yes, we did. We asked AI just for the crack. So we put it into chat. GPT. I said, who should present the Late Late Show? As an AI language model, it said, I am not programmed to have personal preferences or opinions, but historically, the Late Late Show in Ireland has been hosted by Ryan Tuberty since 2009. However, there have been other notable presenters of the show in the past, such as Gay Byrne, who hosted the show for over 30 years and is considered an iconic figure in Irish broadcasting. Ultimately, the decision of who should present the Late Late is up to the producers and executives of the show, who will consider factors such as popularity, experience and audience appeal. So there you go. Get off the fence, chat GPT. So no answers there for the new DG from chat GPT. Just we said we'd give this a mention. Next Monday night in Vicar Street, the people down there are gearing up for a great event. Fighting Words, Ukrainian Action in Ireland and the Irish Red Cross have come together for the Inner Light Project. It's a unified gesture of solidarity in support of the millions who have been forced to flee as a result of the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Ukraine. There's a great lineup there. Next Monday, 24th, still tickets available. Roddy Doyle, Glenn Hansard, Cathy Davey, Paul Muldoon, Colin McNamara, our favourite here. Patrick Frayne is there. Used to be a musician. Didn't know that. No, I did know that, but I'm telling you now. And there'll be people travelling from Ukraine as well, especially for the concert. Ticketmaster.ie, the Inner Light Project, next Monday night, Vicar Street. A great cause, and not just a great cause, but it's a show of solidarity for our friends in Ukraine. Ray, stick with the old ways and sayings. Cast near a clout till May be out. May is the hawthorn blossoms. We get this wrong every time because it's people think it's the coat. You know, cast near a clout till May is out. May is the hawthorn bush. So don't throw away the coat and warm clothes till the hawthorn blossom is out, which often is the month of May. Yes, it's a perennial, isn't it? Hamilton tickets are on sale soon, but the show's not coming till September 2024. That's a long wait. Is it worth the wait? Well, they're saying it is. It's worth the wait. Yes.
You'll be back soon, you'll see. You remember you belong to me. you'll be back. Time will tell. You remember that I served you well. Oceans rise.
Thank you. 2024. Wow. 51551, Ray at RTE.ie. Good afternoon. Top tune. Parachute. Something happens. Yes, Ray, parachute, top tune. Somebody agrees with me. 51551. A good pair of shoes or a good mattress. If you're not in one, you're in the other. Says Dot, with reference to Mattress Mick, who'll be with us after. I can't, but like, that's, you've arrived, haven't you? When they have a musical of your life. Like, there's Hamilton and there's Mattress Mick. You see, you know. Then they try with JFK. I remember reading about that. It came to the Olympia Theatre in Dublin. I think it lasted two nights, JFK the musical. Just, it didn't take off for some reason. I don't know why. So your man, the King, is getting the crown on Saturday the 6th of May. Yes, the coronation of King Charles is happening. And they've announced that part of the sort of menu for the day, because there's going to be street parties all over the UK and further afield. And Buckingham Palace chef Mark Flanagan, he's the royal chef, he must have Irish connections, have announced the quiche. It's sort of the royal quiche. And there's a recipe there in The Guardian today. Coronation quiche, they're calling it. Like coronation chicken. That wasn't called coronation chicken back in 1953. It was called Poulet Reine Elizabeth. And that's where you have the old bit of cooked chicken, maybe curry chicken, and then you mix a bit of yogurt and mayonnaise with it. Delicious. A big fan of coronation chicken. I don't know if I'm going to be as big a fan of coronation quiche. So, British cheddar, you can use Irish cheddar. Quiche contains two vegetables in season, spinach and broad beans. The King seemingly avoids meat and fish 2 days a week. So he's a two-day vegetarian. He's also known to be a keen kitchen gardener, or possibly a keen supervisor of other people's labour in the kitchen garden. And there's tarragon in it as well. I found a tarragon in a sort of a pie. So that's it now. It's going to be, it's coronation quiche. I don't know if it's going to take off. Felicity Cloke, who I'm a big fan of, is calling it more a pie than a quiche. But there it is. You'll be hearing more about that, I would imagine. Now, we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock to take part in our Who Done It quiz. Two quizzers, three Who Done It questions on music, sport, books, politics, inventions. Like all Who Done It's, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two. And if you go with a clue, it's easier, so you get 1 point for a correct answer. Great prize this week. Yes, it's the time of the year where you just want to go somewhere, don't you? Just want to go somewhere different. Let somebody else make your bed. Somebody else make the breakfast. Cook the dinner. Well, you could be off to the Killarney Towers Hotel and Leisure Centre in Kerry for a two-night stay for two. Breakfast each morning and a three-course meal in the Inishfallen restaurant, followed by complimentary drinks and live music in the O'Donoghue Public House. Whether you want to explore the beautiful landscapes of the wild Atlantic Way or stay a little closer to home and soak up the atmosphere of Killarney, Killarney Towers Hotel is the ideal base. KillarneyTowers.com. KillarneyTowers.com. So here's your qualifying question on this Tuesday afternoon. On the show today, we'll be meeting the team behind which brand new musical? Is it Mattress Mick or Bedspread Mick? So we'll be meeting the team behind which brand new musical? Mattress Mick the musical or Bedspread Mick the musical? 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Niamh and Navin has been on to 51551. I don't know, maybe I've been living under a rock, but I've never heard sight nor sound of Hamilton the musical before. This is the first I'm hearing of it. I thought I was fairly up to date with entertainment. Probably not, Niamh. P.S. Parachute, love it. Doesn't get played enough ever. Maybe you're stuck back in parachute days. And somebody else says, Parachute is indeed a tune. For those few minutes, I was 21 again, all Doc Martens and flowery shirts, just like the man who sang it. And Ray, quiche in our house was always pronounced Quickie Lorraine. Oh, Quiche Lorraine. Yeah. 40 years later, we still call it that, and my dad still cracks up. What's for dinner tonight? Quickie Lorraine. Very good. Now, forget the so-called great men theory. Infection and diseases are the really important forces in the development of humankind. So says public health specialist Jonathan Kennedy, whose new book, Pathogenesis takes a look at how germs shaped our world and changed the course of our history, from Neanderthal man to slavery to capitalism. Humans didn't make history, we played host. So says our next guest. How are you doing, Jonathan?
I'm great. How are you, Ray?
Good. Good to talk to you. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's one of those books that's going to change the way I think about the world. And anybody who reads it, I think, will be the same. Just figures first, because the cover that I have, I don't know if it's the final cover, is germs, microbiomes, bacteria, whatever, under a microscope. How much of the world's biomass are made up of those sort of things?
Yeah, so basically, if we were to take all the bacteria in the world and weigh them, they would weigh 1,000 times more than all the humans on the planet, which, when you bear in mind how tiny bacteria are, this is really, really mind-blowing. And there's even another fact about viruses that I find even more hard to believe, which is if you took every virus on the planet and you put it end-to-end, it would reach for apparently 100 million light years.
You see, now you're frying my brain here.
Mine too.
This was it accelerated or inspired by the pandemic?
Partially by the pandemic.
Yes.
Because, you know, I have a background in public health and I teach and research it at Queen Mary University in London. And, you know, obviously the pandemic came along and it was terrible. It killed, WHO say, 15 million people. It disrupted our lives in a way that would have been really hard to imagine a few months before. And it became a cliche, more or less straight away, for people to say that this was unprecedented, this was an aberration. And I started thinking, and, you know, I look back at history and I thought, actually, if we go back through certainly the last few thousand years, we actually see that you know, the past is punctuated by these periodic pandemics and epidemics, and they're horrible. They kill lots of people. They sometimes bring whole civilizations crashing down. But also they're a motor of historical change, because they create space for new ideas and for new societies to emerge. And I guess the other motivation was my partner had a baby, our first baby, about 2.5 years ago. And so I found myself at home a lot and not going out. And this was a good way to pass the time and keep myself entertained when in between looking after right. The baby. So
that's a great story. When they grow up, is it a boy or a girl?
It's a girl, Zaha, little Zaha.
Zaha, you were the reason for pathogenesis. So right back to the beginning, fascinating stuff about Homo sapiens versus Neanderthal man. Because we when we think of Neanderthal man, we think of sort of a gruff, almost stupid being. Homo sapiens came along and they're, you know, they're walking erectly, bigger brains. We're the superstars. And that's why Neanderthal man didn't survive, because we were just better at things.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's becoming increasingly apparent that this idea that Neanderthal was a brutish caveman is just untrue. The more we learn about Neanderthals, the more we realize that they were like us. They painted cave walls. They could talk. They were able to use certain medicinal plants to treat maladies. And they even seemed to sail between islands in the eastern Mediterranean. So, you know, they weren't that much different to us 50,000 years ago. And actually, they were bigger than us and they were stronger than us. And so this kind of creates a really big mystery, because if they were bigger, stronger than us, if we weren't any smarter than them,
yeah,
why did we survive and why did Neanderthals disappear?
The answer is
infectious diseases plus a bit of climate change. So because Homo sapiens were pushing up from tropical Africa, we carried more and more deadly infectious diseases. So to understand why that is, we have to understand a little bit of basic science. So the closer you get to the equator, the more of the sun's energy reaches the ground, and therefore you have more vegetation, you have more animals living on that vegetation, and you have more microbes living on, well, those animals and that vegetation. So there's more chance of a deadly disease emerging.
Yeah.
And in infecting Homo sapiens, whereas the Neanderthals were were across the whole of Western Eurasia. So as you were, I think you were talking about the weather earlier. So we were living in a pretty dark, pretty cold environment. Or sorry, Neanderthals were living in a pretty dark, cold environment, and there weren't so many microbes and so many germs. So when we pushed up and when we met, it was the diseases that were a kind of unwitting secret weapon that wiped out the Neanderthals.
And this is a recurring theme in the book, that people who are immune to disease but carriers thereof bring it to somebody else or somewhere else and wipe out, in some cases, total populations. And that's the crux of your thesis, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, if we look at, say, the conquest of the Americas by the Spanish in the 1500s, you know, there's these remarkable stories of these conquistadors, as they were called, you know, taking down vast, complex, sophisticated civilizations with sometimes a few hundred, sometimes even a few dozen men. And historically, this has been explained in terms of we had better technology, or if we go back even further, we had better gods or a better god.
Yes.
But, you know, neither of these explanations are really, really very, very good. I mean, I think we can just compare, say, what happened in Afghanistan in the last 20 years, right? The fact that, you know, the US and the US allies went to Afghanistan with 130,000 troops, with all this cutting-edge military technology, and they tried their hardest to achieve, you know, pretty modest aims, and they had to kind of leave with their tails between their legs. Whereas, you know, you have kind of
where does disease come into that story?
Not at all.
No, disease, not at all. Okay, right. Okay.
Not at all. But disease comes into the story of the
Cortez
Spanish.
And Pizarro. So
basically, they were helped by these secret weapons, initially smallpox and then all sorts of other infectious diseases, your plague, your measles. And we estimate that within 100 years of Columbus arriving in the Americas, the indigenous population had fallen by 90%. So it had been literally decimated, fallen from 60 million to about 6 million. And this had a massive impact on the world. We see atmospheric CO2 falling, and we see a decline in global temperatures, and this contributed to the coldest period of the Little Ice Age in the 1600s. So your readers might have seen, you know, images of the Thames freezing over and people ice skating and Christmas fairs, and this is from this time.
Mm. And just to go back, because we won't be sticking to the chronology of it, because you have to.
Sorry about that.
No problem at all. But like Athens versus Sparta, we all have a vague memory of that from our school days and history, and diseases sort of influenced that result as well.
Yeah. So this is, you know, one of the first episodes of written history, the Peloponnesian War. So Thucydides, writing in the middle of the 5th century BCE, described this great conflict that lasted for almost three decades between the city-state of Athens and the city-state of Sparta. And they were really very different polities. Athens, on the one hand, was full of these great intellects, so the likes of Herodotus, Thucydides, playwrights like Sophocles, Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, a really open, intellectually flourishing society. And it was also one of the first democracies in history, whereas Sparta was this really militarized society, where people spent their whole, or males spent their whole lives basically preparing to fight. And so there was this big war between these two very different cultures. And, you know, Athens probably would have won out, but then the Athenians, when they were attacked by the Spartans, they retreated behind the great city walls of Athens. And then a disease spread among the population and wiped out a third of Athens, including the army, and it killed the great statesman and general Pericles. And this was, according to Thucydides, a turning point in the war. Nothing did so much to damage the Athenians as this great plague of Athens. And so we see after that a slow decline of Athens and Sparta winning. And this really kind of changes the course of history.
Yeah. Just on a more sort of general theme, a fascinating fact from the book is that hunter-gatherers, how many thousands of years ago was that? Their life expectancy was 72. And here we are in 2023 and the global life expectancy is 73. So we would have thought that way back then that life expectancy would have been really low. But what has happened over the years is that it's gone from 72 down to, in some cases, 40s, 30s and back up again.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And it's something that really shocked me when I was doing the research for the book. So this estimate of life expectancy of hunter-gatherers being in the low to mid-70s comes from actually existing hunter-gathering communities in the world today and over the last 50 years or so, and we extrapolate from that. But the adoption of agriculture, so what, 12,000 years ago in the Fertile Crescent, so, you know, in the Middle East between about Egypt and Iraq, people started experimenting by domesticating animals and cultivating various wild crops. And within a few thousand years, this had caught on and it spread throughout the whole of Eurasia. And there's big debates about whether this was good or not for society. Some people think it's terrible because you had, you know, for the first time, lots of people had to engage in this really kind of backbreaking, mind-numbing work on fields. Mm. And other people think it was a great thing because it was the first great leap on the road to progress, on the road to civilization that we now live in. I guess it depends on whether you think the world we live in today is a good place or not. And you know, I'm still not sure. My opinion changes from day to day.
But really, it was the beginning of us, in a big way, changing our environment.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we can be sure of. It was certainly a good thing for infectious diseases and a bad thing for our health.
Exactly. So we were gathering in bigger groups, closer together, and that's perfect for our little friends, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And it was the first time we were living really kind of cheek by jowl with animals, so farm animals, but also the kind of parasites that are attracted by grain, and that we were living close to one another. And also the first point in which we really started engaging in trade between far-flung places. And so this really created the perfect conditions for infectious diseases to, well, first hop the species barrier from animals to humans, which is, you know, the base, the source of most infectious diseases that infect humans, and then to spread from human to human and across vast distances. Mm. So
there was a similar book back in the 70s, but the advances in DNA tracing have, you know, improved what we can say, because back then in the 70s, they weren't able to tell from bones whether they suffered diseases, but now they can.
Yeah, this is really something that, again, blew my mind when I started reading about it for the book. I began by thinking I'd write a kind of modern history, maybe from ancient Greece to the present day. And then I started reading about advances in extracting and analyzing ancient DNA. And, you know, it just struck me as almost kind of magic, the way that these scientists can take old bones thousands of years old and get DNA and then kind of find out so much about the world from that DNA. And so, you know, we can tell a lot about the identity of the person whose bones they are, but also when we extract DNA, we gather genetic information from the microbes that were in the in the bloodstream at the time of death. So we can make a pretty good diagnosis as to what those people died from, you know, often 5,000 years ago. So there's one story that I really find absolutely fascinating, Ray. And that's from Western Sweden. There was a mass grave containing about 70 bodies, and they're about 5,000 years old. And for years, it's been a mystery as to why they died. You know, at the time, Scandinavia would have been a really kind of distant outpost of Western Eurasia. And it's unclear how so many people died in such a short period of time. But now we know, because scientists managed to extract the DNA of the bacteria, that it was caused by plague, Yersinia pestis, so the same disease that caused the Black Death. Mm. And this is fascinating in and of itself, but also when we start to piece this together with other bits of information, we realize that there were outbreaks of plague across the whole of Eurasia, from kind of the Siberian, from Siberia all the way to Western Europe. And we also know that the population declined by maybe 50-60% at this point about 5,000 years ago. So we start to build a picture of this kind of horrible, devastating Neolithic Black Death that occurred 5,000 years ago. And I think the really amazing thing about this, Ray, is the fact that we can still see and hear the consequences of this pandemic today. And that's because the population of Europe fell, and then a new group of people moved in from the far east of Europe, the kind of Eurasian steppe.
The steppe herders.
The steppe herders. And these people were taller. They had lighter hair, lighter features. And they kind of seem to have surged across Europe, bringing not just their genes with them, which still account for about 40% of the DNA of people in Northern Europe today. But also they appear to have brought Indo-European languages with them as well. So English and Gaelic.
And the way was left open to them because of Black Death. And you say in the book that Black Death was a pivotal moment in the history of mankind.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously COVID was terrible, but it was nothing compared to the Black Death. Within 5 years, in the middle of the 14th century, perhaps 60% of Europe's population died. And there are all sorts of anecdotes. I think there's one specific to Ireland in the book that's kind of really heartbreaking. A monk in Kilkenny who was writing a chronicle, and he must have realized he was going to die. People around him must have been dying, and he was getting ill. And he wrote in his chronicle that he was going to leave some empty pages in his book, so if anyone survived, then they would be able to take up the task. And then, you know, I guess what's really interesting is the long-term impact of all this death that you see. All of a sudden, you have a kind of change in the relationship between lords who kind of dominate their manors and the serfs, the peasants who worked on the manors, because labor becomes, you know, kind of really in demand because there's only half the workers. And so there was this big struggle between the lords and the serfs that lasted a century, but eventually the serfs managed to win their freedom. And this basically kind of kickstarted a process that ended up with the emergence of capitalism.
Capitalism, so, yeah. Before we get to the Industrial Revolution and that, I just want to talk about, you know, the ignorance of people. So they didn't know why people were dying. They didn't know about medicine. There was no science. So how did they explain it?
There's a variety of different explanations. But if we go back to ancient Greece, it was thought to be the angry Apollo who would bring plague. And he would basically fire his arrows of plague at the population when he was mad. And this seems to have been a pretty strong explanation throughout most of history, that somehow an angry god was seen to be to blame for these devastating pandemics. And sometimes there were other explanations as well that kind of fitted in with this. During the Black Death, the University of Paris, which was the most elite educational institution in Europe at the time, did a big study, and they found that the Black Death was caused by the kind of irregular meeting of three planets at that particular point in time. Mm. So yeah, not very good explanations, but understandable at the time.
Yeah. So the Industrial Revolution, and we were talking about life expectancy there, and with modernization, you would think that life expectancy would increase. But again, it was bringing more people together in cities. The sanitation wasn't good, and it was friendly for our little friends again, and disease spread. Another fascinating part of the book is you make a connection between slavery, particularly black slavery, and diseases, because when slavery began, it wasn't exclusively black slaves.
Yeah, so take, for example, Barbados, which was a British colony that was established in the 1620s. And the idea was the British wanted to cash in on the growing demand for sugar in Europe and in Britain in particular. And so they wanted to set up these sugar plantations, but they needed people to work on the plantations and to harvest and process the crop. And there wasn't a tradition of slavery in the British Isles at that time. So what the British did was they brought indentured labourers, so people who paid, basically kind of got a free trip across the Atlantic, and in return they would work for between three and seven years. And actually there's an Irish element to this story as well, because in the middle of the 17th century, when Cromwell was doing terrible things in Ireland, he deported a large number of Irish dissidents to Barbados, and they also worked as kind of indentured labourers on the
And what was the difference between an indentured labourer and a slave?
Well, basically, after 7 years, you were free to make a new life in the new in the new world. So, you know, kind of certainly nowhere near as, you know, you're basically free. You've basically signed a contract for a certain point of time, and then you're free to do what you want. And then in the middle of the 1600s, there was this devastating yellow fever outbreak in Barbados, and this killed, you know, maybe half of the population, the white population at least. But there were some enslaved labourers who'd been brought over from Africa, and they weren't affected because they'd grown up in a yellow fever endemic part of the world.
They were immune.
They were immune. Yeah. So basically, after a few devastating yellow fever epidemics in the Caribbean, the plantation owners, who were, you know, driven by profit, realized that it was better for their businesses if they used these enslaved laborers from Africa who had immunity. So in a way, microbes brought out the worst, the worst in people, and kind of brought about this terrible episode in the history of the world, really.
Which is still shaping some societies today. How many people were transported from Africa across the Atlantic?
Estimates at about 12 and a half million, and 2 million are supposed to have died on the journey. So it's really, really horrific when we think about what these people were then sold into slavery. Often they were separated from their partners, from their children. They were forced to work in horrific conditions and subjected to violence, and in the case of women, terrible sexual violence. So really, really horrible, really horrible.
Yeah, well, you go through that as well, like colonialism, and it's horrific what happened over the years, isn't it? It's hard to, when you see it condensed into 250 pages, along with the diseases, it's hard to really take on board. We're going to take a break here. We're speaking to Jonathan Kennedy. His book is Pathogenesis. We're going to talk about the pandemic in a moment, but first this quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Pathogenesis is the new book by Jonathan Kennedy. Hi, Ray. Could you ask Jonathan the genius, if Ebola became airborne like COVID, would that be the end of us? Simon wants to know.
Oh, I'm a sociologist rather than a medical doctor, okay. So I don't feel qualified to say that.
Fair enough. I'm reading Pathogenesis at the moment, and it's the best book I've read on this subject since Guns, Germs and Steel by Jared Diamond, which is mentioned in your book. A wonderful read, says that person. And did war not shape our history and create nearly all bacteria and diseases even now, says Porik?
Yeah, but I think we have to see that there's a really kind of iterative relationship between war on the one hand and infectious diseases on the other.
And which came first is the question, and infectious diseases is the answer, isn't it?
I mean, infectious diseases have been around since humans have been around. So I think you know, kind of they often have a really kind of strong combined impact and help one side rather than the rather than the other.
Yeah. There is little about it that is new or remarkable, is what you say in the book about the pandemic and COVID-19. I want to ask you a few questions about that. Firstly, if this book was written in 200 years' time or 100 years' time, how would you think the pandemic will be depicted as changing, if any change is as a result of the pandemic or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first thing to say is that, you know, we shouldn't necessarily see COVID as a once in a lifetime occurrence or as an aberration. It seems like we're entering a new golden age for microbes, for germs, because
quite so.
A combination of unprecedented population growth, increased encroachment onto animal habitats, industrial scale farming, and the ease at which we can move from one place to another throughout the world very, very quickly. This is all combined to create perfect conditions for infectious diseases to first emerge and then to spread quickly. And I mean, certainly I think it's hard in the middle of something, or, you know, just a few months after the pandemic has ended, to really kind of look to the future and say how things are going to change. But it certainly does feel like we're in a really quite a profound moment of change in terms of the way the world is going. Whether we look at, I don't know, for example, the rise of China, or the reemergence of China as a global power, whether we look at the massive role that information technology is playing on our lives and changing our lives, whether we look at basically the faith that people have in liberal democracy. I think it's probably a bit different in Ireland. You've kind of avoided, it seems, the kind of terrible populist politics that's affected my own country.
So far, anyway, I was just looking at the stats there from the book. So 0.31% of the American population died as a result of COVID. The figures from the UK were 0.27%. We calculated ours here, 0.18%. So I suppose we did well. Our approach, and we could compare and contrast in real time, because we obviously get the BBC and ITV and all that. And it looked like we were doing a better job managing COVID than you did in the UK.
Yeah, I think you'd struggle to do a worse job, really. And that's, you know, you have to just look at our political leaders at the time. I'm sure your listeners are aware of the shortcomings of people like Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock. But it really shows you how, you know, this isn't just about, you know, dealing with the next pandemic or dealing with any pandemic. It's not just about developing cutting edge medicines. It's also about getting your political house in order and kind of making sure you have politicians and policymakers who can take charge of the situation and do what's best for the country rather than worry about votes.
I suppose there are pros and cons with an administration like China, because definitely they had control, but at what cost?
Yeah, no, China has a very, very low rate of infections and a very, very low death rate. But I certainly wouldn't want to live in China. I mean, So although the state in China has the power to really lock down, there's a big question to be had with how you respond to these kind of public health emergencies. And it gets to one of the really fundamental issues in political philosophy, really. Like, to what extent does the state have the right to interfere in the freedoms of individuals and people's families? And that's something that we need to debate as a society in a grown up way.
And the other thing is, on a global level, it sort of highlighted the inequality. And you talk about vaccine apartheid. So we bought up all the vaccines in the sort of wealthy Western society, and sub-Saharan Africa, they didn't get a lot of the vaccines that were going. That seems unfair, unjust.
No, definitely. And I think the sad thing about this was that we hadn't learnt anything from the HIV/AIDS crisis. So around the early 2000s, you know, people who lived in Ireland or in the UK or America, they could get antiretroviral drugs, and it basically meant that they they didn't get sick from HIV/AIDS, and they couldn't pass it on to anyone else. But these drugs cost about $10,000 a year, which is expensive in Northern Europe, but it's totally unattainable for someone, or for most people living in sub-Saharan Africa. And so in the time that it took the drug companies to lower the price to about $300 a year for poor people in poor countries, something like 10 million people died. And I think the really sad thing, and the thing that made me angry, was that we hadn't learned from this. So you had the pandemic 20 years later, and still Europeans and North Americans were hogging the vaccines, hogging the medicine, and didn't want to share them with other people.
You mentioned earlier on, like, technology, and I think climate change, technology, infectious diseases, they all have to be tackled on a global scale with cooperation across all countries. And until that happens, we're going to continue to have pandemics, I would think. We're not going to get control of the technology companies, and we won't get a grip with climate change either.
No, definitely. I think that's something that, you know, kind of infectious diseases shows really, really clearly, that, you know, these little microbes, they don't respect national borders. So if we basically let COVID rip in sub-Saharan Africa, there's much more chance that a mutation will occur that will harm not just sub-Saharan Africans, but the whole of the world, including us. So that's that's the sad thing about the inequalities in the world. They're also, it's not just terrible, but that poor people in poor countries are damaged. It also is counterproductive for us as well. So there's selfish reasons to help poor people in poor countries, as well as moral reasons.
Humans did not make history. We played host. Pathogenesis is the new book by Jonathan Kennedy. It's a fascinating read. Jonathan, thanks for your time today. Congratulations.
Thank you so much for allowing me to talk on your show. It was lots of fun. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurmaga Kaut. Thank you very much. 51551 ray at rte.ie. I found your show especially fascinating today to listen to Jonathan Kennedy. I'll definitely get his book. I'm so interested in this subject as I work in anthropology. Would love to ask Jonathan if he believes in a human creator of this universe, or does he believe in the Big Bang Theory? I do believe in the Big Bang Theory, but subsequently someone, something created the atoms that exploded. But then who created the person who created the atoms, and then who created them, and then the ad infinitum? It's an interesting one, though. So, yeah. We'll come back to that someday, or maybe not. Okay, who done it? Yes, who created the world? Yes, yes. Two quizzers standing by. We won't be asking them that question. And a prize. And it's two-night stay for two people in the Killarney Towers Hotel and Leisure Centre in Kerry. And it's breakfast on both mornings, and then dinner on one of the evenings in the Inishfallen restaurant, followed by complimentary drinks and live music in the O'Donoghue Public House. You can explore everything that the Wild Atlantic Way has to offer down that neck of the woods, or just hang around Killarney. It's all available to you when you stay at Killarney Towers Hotel, killarneytowers.com. Hello, Maria Griffin, Maynooth, County Kildare.
Hi, Ray, how are you?
Not too bad. Home of Paul Mescal.
Sorry? No, not Paul Mescal, Paul Lyons.
Sorry? Paul, you're not married to Paul. No, I wasn't suggesting you were married to Paul Mescal. I was saying that Maynooth is home to Paul Mescal.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said you're at home with Paul Mescal. I said no. Yes, I am. Yes, yeah, he's
that's great. Yeah, so. Right, that's yeah, Paul Lyons is your husband.
Yes. Paul Mescal is a big talking point here, Maynooth.
Maynooth, yes, yeah.
They're all very proud of him.
Yeah, he's Maynooth's most famous son until Paul Lyons overtakes him. You're at home on maternity leave.
I am, yeah. I'm here with my five-month-old, and I'm hovering in the sling, so I'm hoping she stays quiet while I do this. So.
And what's her name?
Her name's Daisy.
And it's your second child?
Second. I have an older little girl.
And what age is the older little girl?
She'll be three now in July.
Ah, yeah. Right. So you have your hands full. And how's it going with Daisy? Yeah.
It's great. Oh, it's much different second time round. A lot more chilled out. And, loving maternity leave at the moment.
Do you serenade her? Do you?
Yeah, all the time. She literally knows that song. Yeah.
Does she? Daisy. Give me your hands.
She quite knew it when you sing it to her.
Yeah. I think it's a proposal of marriage, that song. Anyway, it doesn't matter as long as it's Daisy's mentioned in it. Yeah. Okay, you're up against Leo O'Drummer in Hoth. Is that correct, Leo?
Balu ye ort. I'm originally from Clonmel, Tipperary.
Right.
And sitting here now in the seafront, in front of the harbour here in Howth, looking out on Ireland's Eye.
Lovely.
And Lambie Island, and the sun has just come out.
Ah, great. Yeah. So you have a sea view, do you?
I have a sea view, yeah. Nice. Watching people going by. I have a lovely sea view.
There's loads of research to suggest that having a sea view, and you're very lucky to have it, is hugely important for your mental health. It really, you know, makes things better in your world.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
I would agree. I don't live here now, but where I live is in Dollymount.
Right, okay.
And I have a lovely sea view
there as well.
I'm there as well. I have a sea view over Dublin Bay for 365 days a year from morning to night.
Nice.
No interruption.
Because Clonmel is a landlocked town.
It's a landlocked town, but we have the beautiful Cumbres rising up at the south of the town, and we've the River Shore running down, dividing the town between Waterford and Tipperary. Tipperary to the north, Waterford to the south.
And Leo, is it the biggest, as in most populous, inland town in Ireland? I think it is. I think I read that.
Well,
somewhere.
That's what I was taught myself when I was going to school.
Right.
I don't know. I'd say it might have been overtaken, but certainly when I was going to school, we were in the Republic. We were the biggest inland town in Ireland.
I wonder who would have overtaken it. Newbridge? No.
Possibly Kilkenny, maybe.
Oh, Kilkenny, yes. Of course, Kilkenny's a city, Leo.
Well, they may call it a city, but I mean, is it entitled to call itself a city?
Be careful, yeah.
Well, it doesn't have a municipal theatre like we have in Clonmel.
There you go. They're very sensitive about that.
We did have, now, unfortunately, now it's a furniture store.
Oh, is
it? We've gone Philistine.
Because, and was there a connection with Andrew Lloyd Webber down there? Is that Clonmel? No.
There was, He owns a property. He bought a property beside Feathered.
Aha, I knew there was some connection. And
Fjord. Yeah.
Yes, which is because there's one in Wexford as well, isn't there? Feathered on Sea.
Yeah.
Okay, now, sorry, Maria, we went off on a tangent there. So it's Maria versus Leo. Three questions. I tell you the category, and then I ask you, do you want to go with a clue or not? And if you go with a clue, you get 1 point for a correct answer. If you go without a clue, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's drawn points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Right, Maria, the first category is music. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue, please.
No clue. Okay, so for two, who is this? I'm out of love. Who's that?
That is Anastasia.
It is. I'm out of love. Anastasia, 2 points. Leo, that was good, wasn't it?
It was good.
Yes.
I didn't have a clue.
So, music for you too, Leo. What do you want to do?
I'll go without a clue.
Okay.
There we go.
For 2 points, who is this? But I will go down with this shit. And I won't put my hands up. And it is?
I'll chance Adele.
No. That's Dido.
All right.
She was related to the O'Malleys, Desi O'Malley. I think she was a niece or a cousin or something like that. Yeah. Thank You was her big hit. That was White Flag. Okay. Stay with us, Leo. Early days. Maria, back to you for your second question. TV hosts. What do you want to do?
I'll go no clue.
No clue. Okay, for two. Can you name this TV host?
I'm interested in people who feel like they've got something figured out, or involved in a world or a lifestyle or just some situation that is either self-sabotaging or filled with angst. In the end, I'm not trying to get one over on people. I'm not trying to. Honestly, most interviews I see as a potential win-win.
Who's that?
Oh, gosh, I haven't a clue.
No. That is Louis Theroux. Yes. So no points there, right? The clue, if you went for it, a BBC television presenter famous for his unusual documentaries, may not have been any help, but that was the clue.
No, I went for it.
Okay, Leo, chance for you now. It's TV hosts. What do you want to do?
No clue.
Okay, for two. Can you name this TV host?
Up until this point, I've kind of had all these plates spinning. I had children, I got married, I got the house, I was working and sort of building myself in my career. And all of those things are lovely and wonderful. And it really felt like something was missing. And it scared me a little bit. And I realised the thing that was missing was me. Because all of my life and all of my energy had gone on all these things around me.
Who's that?
Don't know.
Do you want to guess? TV host? No. Holly Willoughby.
All right.
She co-hosts This Morning with Philip Schofield. She's very famous over the other side of the Irish Sea. Okay.
Don't look at enough TV.
No. Now, let's see. Yeah, so you've yet to score, Leo. Maria, you're on two. So if you get anything from this final question, you're today's winner. Leo can't catch you.
Okay, I'll go for a clue, though.
You go
please.
For a clue, okay. Yeah. It's Irish Voices. He was once part of a very famous boy band. For 1 point, and to be today's winner, who is this?
I'm interested in people who feel like they've got something figured out.
Sorry, Louis, go away. It's this one. Who is this?
I go home like a couple of times a year. My dad still lives in the same spot, so it gets kind of hectic around the house. But yeah, like, it's good. I get to go home and, you know, go see the lads and stuff like that and see the family. And it's, yeah, I like that side of it. But yeah, Miss Ireland, obviously, would like to go there a lot more. But
who's that?
Oh, is it Niall Horan?
It is Niall Horan, formerly of One Direction. You get a point. There you go. Leo, sorry about that.
All right, OK. Well done, Claire, isn't it? Yeah.
No, Maria. Maria.
Sorry,
Leo, listen.
All right, no, thank you very much. Thank you very much,
I really enjoyed our chat, and you brought us there. We were out in Hothall looking out at the lovely sea view with the sun shining. We're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show Keep Cup.
Oh, very good. I can't wait for it.
Mind yourself, Leo. See you. Bye.
All right,
bye.
Ray.
Bye. Good luck. Bye. Slán. No, I didn't believe me either. Okay, well done, Maria. So you are off to Killarney Towers Hotel and Leisure Centre in Kerry. 2 nights stay for you and a person of your choice. Loads of things to do down there, and you can look what's in store for you, killarneytowers.com. Well done, Maria.
Great.
Mind yourself. And Daisy, Daisy was really well behaved.
Oh, she is. She's
right there. She's Bye, Daisy. See you, Daisy.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, we're back. We're back with a bang.
I'm back with a bang. The undisputed king of mattress land. I have 200 channels on my mattress TV. I take 2 spoons of mattress in my mattress TV.
Yeah. In February, we brought you some exciting news about Mattress Make the Musical. Well, today, more pillow talk, because the musical is coming to Dublin's Liberty Hall at the end of this month. Joined in studio now by Mattress Mick. How are you doing, Mick?
Very well, Ray.
Good to see you.
Yes,
and the man who will play him in the musical, he's a real bed ringer for Mick. It's Conor Duffy. How are you doing, Conor?
How's it going, Ray? Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Great to have you in studio. I think they're on both sides out there. That's, yeah. Thanks so much for coming in. We've loads of things to talk about, the musical, and I want to talk to you about Margaret as well, Mick.
Oh, thank you.
Your late wife. But we'll get to the musical first. So how did this come about? Because I wasn't here when you were in February. You spoke to Catherine.
That's right, yeah.
So remind us how it came about.
Well, I met this lovely lady called Josie McCaffrey a couple of years ago, who she's involved in kind of the entertainment industry. But we had the film about Mattress Men, and it came up in discussion about a musical. Why not do a musical? And I said, that's not going to happen. Yeah. You know, I can't even sing properly myself. Yeah, don't worry about that. We'll get somebody to play it. And hence, we have
Connor.
It's been a been worked on for the last 12 months or even more. And Josephine has done a tremendous job in getting it all together.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of the fact, like, I mean, to say there's a musical about me.
Yeah. You know? Well, you have a very interesting life, Mick. Well, you do. You know, like, you're a Pier Street boy.
Yes.
You started from nothing.
Yes.
Went big.
Went down,
yeah. Back up again. Yeah. And in the middle of all that, you were doing dance tracks.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
On your show.
Yeah. And there was the Stephen Fry bit as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, Stephen Fry saw one of my posters, the one in the North Strand, Five Lamps, and he tweeted about me. And that was a super boost to the Mattress Mick profile.
Yeah.
To get somebody like him to do that.
And just the sort of the short version of it, but you built up a business, Celtic Tiger hit, everybody was buying new beds,
yes,
new houses, new flats, new apartments,
yes,
and business went through the roof. How many shops did you have at the height?
Well, in 08-09, I was in the Northside Shopping Centre, which I didn't work.
Right.
So that's how I created Mattress Mick. Out of the ashes of Northside Furniture became Mattress Mick.
Because you had to do something.
Yeah.
How down on your luck were you?
Very bad. Yeah. Really down, because I had put all my own money, reserves, into the existing business at Northside.
Yeah.
But it was too late. Yeah. It was just like throwing it into the river. But
were you always a frustrated performer? Like, you know what I mean? You seem to come pretty naturally. Connor, you're an actor-performer.
I am indeed, yep.
But Mick has it, doesn't he? He has something. There's something about him.
Oh, yeah, he's got a certain special kind of charisma, all right. Yeah.
Well, it's desperation. It's desire to be succeed. Desire to have security. You know.
Yes.
I may have
we
failed.
We all have that. All have that, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah. I failed, but I'm not a failure, and I like to fight back, and I like the idea of where I am at the moment.
But isn't that the famous thing? Like, how do you increase your success rate? You double your failure rate.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I don't want to fail again, though.
No. So it's two nights in Liberty Hall. Mm-hmm. Connor Duffy will be Mattress Mick. Was there auditions or?
Yeah. So how it came about was, is I basically had an article from the Irish Independent, I think it was, and my auntie Catherine sent it to me, and she said, "This is on. You should go for it." And I didn't land that Sunday morning, so I went and I did the audition. I liked the vibe and I got the call off Joe, and she's like, "Do you want to be our Mattress Mick?" And I was like, "Yeah, sounds good to me."
Is there a lot of jumping up and down on beds?
You'll have to pay for your tickets. Yeah.
Well, if there isn't, it's an oversight. I mentioned one of the songs, Pier Street Boy. Mm-hmm. What are the other titles? Can you remember?
Well, we've got loads of songs in it. We've got Soldier Soul. We've got the good. These Are the Good Times, which is when the Celtic Tiger is in full swing. We've plenty of songs and they're all original, and Joe has put them all together herself, as well as working with people. Like, it's, she's done fantastic work with it.
How do you think it's going to rate against Hamilton?
Who is Hamilton?
I've never met Hamilton, but I know, we'll blow him out of the water, right?
Yeah. I think this could travel.
We hope it will, Ray.
Because we all, everyone, sleeping is universal. Mattresses are universal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the story of a man coming from nothing, hitting a height, going back down and recovering again, that's universal.
I'm putting
everybody
to sleep.
Well, we hope that won't happen.
It won't happen at the musical.
So it's Thursday 27th and Friday 28th of April, Liberty Hall Theatre, and tickets available. And this is going to be tinged with sadness for you, Mick.
Yes, it is, because my wife passed away in February and she was part of the story. She's actually in the show. And we were always talking about it. She was really excited about the fact that it was happening. And it is, yes, it is something that is going to be very, very difficult to get.
Margaret, how long were you and Margaret together?
40 years.
Right.
40 years we were together. And we had a good life. And Margaret got sick then in November, only last year. She was discovered with a tumour. And
so it was very quick then.
It was, yes, it was very quick. But one thing I have to say is she was in the hospice in Raheny and they were amazing people, absolutely incredible.
Is that St. Francis Hospice?
Yeah. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
So she died, as I said, on the 1st of November. It's raw still, very raw. And I think the musical, I'm dedicating it to her, to be honest with you.
I read an amazing piece you wrote for Humans of Dublin.
Yes.
About Mark. Would you mind reading it? It's just. Would that be too tough?
No, I can do it.
Can you do it?
Yes, okay. I can indeed.
Yeah, okay. Because it's such a moving piece.
The whole lot of it?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Walking home to an empty house is a weird feeling. She had left a great void behind her. In the past few years, my brother died, my sister died, and recently I just lost my wife. One would think that having the experience of losing loved ones in your life will somehow make the next one a little easier to process. Well, or that you would have some kind of toolbox to dampen the hit of the immense grief that piles on top of you. I was just starting to get a little better mentally after losing my sister, then I lost my brother, and soon after my wife got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She was diagnosed in November and died shortly after. Margaret was in the hospice, and when someone gets there is a very small chance left of surviving. Despite this, you hardly acknowledge it. I knew that she wasn't going to come home, but losing her felt so distant and unbelievable. We were together for 40 years. She was there to support me through the toughest and the best times in business. The other day, I made a great business deal, and immediately after, as always, without thinking, I reached for my phone to share the great news with her. The phone rang out once and twice, just to remember that she won't pick up the phone. In life, without realising, we all do things for the last time. You never really know which activities or moment of all moments that are normal part of your day will be the last one day. But you can be sure that there will be a last for everything. I definitely didn't give enough attention to the significance of those phone calls meant to me. That great business deal doesn't feel the same without sharing it with her. It's important to tell people how you feel for them. Always. You never know when the last time that you can.
Yeah.
Phew. It's a nice piece.
It's a nice piece. It's a lovely piece.
And it's very true.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people can
identify
with that. Yeah. Particularly the phone calls.
Like, yeah.
Even the other day, I went to pick up the phone, something happened, and no answer. What?
Yeah, she'll be there in spirit.
She will, actually.
And
is she
in the play?
There's a bit about her in the play, all right. We wouldn't have the play without her.
That's brilliant.
But thank you for that opportunity.
No, but it's lovely because it's a lovely piece, and as you say, it's universal there, isn't it?
Yes, it is actually.
It is universal, yeah. So Conor, is this your big break then?
It'll be certainly one of the biggest parts I've played so far, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, so I trained as an actor in the Liberties College in Bull Alley, and from there I've done sort of bits and bobs in theatre all around the country. I've travelled with pantomimes and other shows and stuff. I have my own theatre company called Head Above Water Theatre. We put on shows in the Seen and Heard Theatre Festival and the Galway Fringe, and I've done bits and pieces of work on Vikings as well, the TV show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Musicals, when they work, are very special.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
They are indeed, yeah.
There's something about them. There's the combination of, you know, the acting and the singing, the dancing, and, you know, you really get the audience going. Mm-hmm. How are rehearsals?
Rehearsals are going great. We're all playing blinders. Everyone on the cast is putting in phenomenal effort, and it's shown in the work, and it's going to show on the shows.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see how the audience reacts to it.
Will that feature Back with a Bang?
Oh, we will indeed, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
You can't do Mattress Make Music without Back with a Bang. You know?
Do you feature yourself, Mick?
No, I'm not in the show. I come out at the end.
Yeah.
I come out Back with a Bang.
Back with a Bang. 10% off all mattresses.
You said it.
How is the business going?
The mattress business is going very, very well.
Yeah.
Extremely. We have 10 shops now around the country.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's going exceptionally well.
I always enjoy our chats about what's in vogue. You know, because you were the first person who introduced the memory foam to me. I hadn't heard about it before.
That's right, I spoke to you about it. Yeah.
So what has memory foam been overtaken?
It has. People found memory foam to be a little bit too warm.
Right.
It's still there, but not to the same density as originally.
Right.
Pocket springs, memory foam, latex, all of these are now in the mattresses.
Right.
It's like a fashion business, Ray.
Yeah.
It changes. And there's so many new ones coming out all the time. There's eco-friendly, there's cool gel, there's all kinds of stuff.
Right. And what's your best seller at the moment?
Pocket sprung with a little small amount of memory foam.
Right.
That'd be the best kind of mixture.
So is the memory foam on top of the of the pocket thing?
Yes, it is.
Aha, right.
So you're sleeping on, and then on top of the memory foam, you have a layer of the fabric that covers the mattress.
Yes, yeah.
But the memory foam gives you that little bit of comfort.
Okay. And what about size?
king size seems to be becoming very popular. King size is a 5 foot mattress.
Right.
Standard mattress in Ireland up to now is 4 foot six,
okay.
Double. But the king size seems to be taking over. And super king as well, which is 6 foot.
Did you ever notice when you're watching movies or watching TV programmes, the beds are always small?
They are.
It's always a double bed, isn't it? It's never king size or super king.
Always a small, but that's changing.
Is it?
In fact, we did a prop for another show there quite recently. We supplied the prop and it was a king size mattress.
Oh, was it? I was thinking it was something to do with the fact that I had to get both actors in the shot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if they were too far apart.
Well, that's, yeah. That's a good point.
Adds drama to the scene.
Right. Okay, so you play him right through.
I do indeed, yep.
Right through, right. But you've a lovely head of black hair. Is there prosthetics involved or?
We'll see now. We'll have to have a meeting with the makeup people to see what they do. But as I say myself, the hair nearly matches now, so we'll have to see.
I'm grey.
Yeah, you're grey. Well, great to see you both. So Mattress Make the Musical, Liberty Hall Theatre in Dublin, Thursday 27th and Friday 28th of April, and tickets still available. Mick, good to see you. Conor, good luck on the show.
Good luck on the show.
Break a leg, as they say. That's it from us. John Cook is on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.